Embedded among the hypnotic pictographs etched into the black volcanic glass, the jewels had glinted in the hazy orange daylight. Though they had remained untouched for thousands of years, these three gems had flaked off as Ganterus stared at them. They fell to his feet in the crushed lava rock surrounding the lost temple. Ganterus had picked up the gems, cupping the warm crystals in his hands, as Strine wandered among the obelisks, chattering to himself. Now Ganterus removed the jewels, one watery pink, another deep red, and the third starkly transparent, with an inner electric blue fire along the edges of the facets. He was meant to have these jewels. They were destined for his own lightsaber. He knew that now. He understood all of his former nightmares, his former fears. Most lightsabers had only a single jewel that focused the pure energy from the power cell into a tight beam. By adding more than one gem, Ganterus's blade would have unexpected capabilities to surprise Master Skywalker. Finally, his fingers raw and aching, Ganterus sat up. Pain embroidered fire lines across his neck, shoulders, and back, but he washed it away with a simple Jedi exercise. Outside the great temple, he could hear the changing symphony of jungle sounds as nocturnal creatures found their dens and daylight animals began to stir. Ganterus held the cylindrical handle of his lightsaber and inspected it under the glow lamp's unforgiving light. Craftsmanship was everything in a weapon like this. A barely noticeable variance could cause a disastrous blunder. But Ganterus had done everything right. He had taken no shortcuts, allowed no sloppiness. His weapon was perfect. He pushed the activator button. With a snap hiss, the awesome blade thrummed and pulsed like a living creature. The chain of three jewels gave the energy blade a pale purplish hue, white at the core, amethyst at the fringes, with rainbow colors rippling up and down the beam. Accustomed to the dimness, Ganterus squeezed his eyes to block out the glare, then gradually opened them again, staring in amazement at what he had made. He moved the blade, and the air crackled around him. The hum sounded like thunder, but none of the other students would hear it through the mammoth thickness of the stone walls. In his grip, the blade felt like a winged serpent, sending the sharp scent of ozone curling to his nose. He slashed back and forth. The lightsaber became a part of him, an extension of his arm connected through the force to strike down any enemy. He sensed no heat from the vibrating blade, only a cold, annihilating fire. He deactivated the blade, awash in euphoria, and carefully hid the completed lightsaber under his sleeping pallet. "Now Master Skywalker will see I am a true Jedi," he said to the shadows along the walls. But no one answered him. 6. The private investigatory proceedings of the New Republic's ruling council stood closed against Admiral Ackbar. He waited in the anteroom outside, staring at the tall steel stone door as if it were a wall blocking the end of his life. He stared unblinking at the designs and scroll work modeled by the Emperor Palpatine after ancient Sith hieroglyphics, and they disturbed him. Ackbar sat on the cold synthetic stone bench, feeling only his misery, despair, and failure. He nursed his bandaged left arm and felt pain slice up and down his biceps, where tiny needles held the slashed salmon-colored skin together. Ackbar had refused standard treatment by medical droid or healing in a Bacta tank programmed for Calamarian physiology. He preferred to let the painful recuperation remind him of the destruction he had caused on Vortex. He cocked his enormous head, listening to the rise and fall of heated voices through the closed door. He could make out only a mingled murmur of mixed voices, some strident, some insistent. He looked down and self-consciously brushed at his clean white admiral's uniform. His remaining injuries seemed insignificant compared to the pain inside him. In his mind, he kept seeing the crystalline cathedral of winds shatter around him in an avalanche of shards, hurling a storm of glassy daggers in all directions. He saw the bodies of winged Vors tumbling around him, slaughtered by the razor-edged crystal sabers. Ackbar had ejected Leia to safety, but he wished he had been brave enough to switch off the crash field because he did not want to live with such disgrace. Ackbar had been piloting the deadly ship, no one else. He had crashed into the precious Cathedral of Winds, no one else. He looked up at the sound of shuffling footsteps and saw another Calamarian approaching tentatively down the rose-hued corridors. The other ducked his head, but swiveled his great fish eyes up to look at his admiral. "Terpfen," Ackbar said. His voice sounded listless, like words dropped onto the polished floor, but he tried to dredge up enthusiasm. "You've come, after all." "I could never desert you, Admiral. The Calamarian crewmen remain your firm supporters, even after..." Akbar nodded, knowing the unshakable loyalty of his chief starship mechanic. As with many of his people, Terpfen had been taken away from his watery homeworld, kidnapped by Imperial enslavers, and forced to work on designing and refining their star destroyers with the renowned Calamarian starship building expertise. But Terpfen had attempted sabotage and had been tortured severely. The scars still showed on his battered head. During the Imperial occupation of the planet Calamari, Akbar himself had been pressed into service as a reluctant aide to Moff Tarkin. He had served Tarkin for several years until he finally escaped during a rebel attack. "Have you completed your investigation?" Akbar asked. "Have you gone over the records that survived the crash?" Terpfen turned his head away. He clasped his broad flipper hands together, his skin flushed with splotches of bright maroon, showing his embarrassment and shame. "I have already filed my report with the New Republic Council." He looked meaningfully at the closed door of the chamber. "I suspect they are discussing it even now." Akbar felt as if he had just attempted to swim under an ice floe. "And what did you find?" he said in a firm voice, trying to resurrect the power of command.
"I found no indication of mechanical failure, Admiral. I've gone over the crash tapes again and again, and I have simulated the flight path through the recorded wind patterns on Vortex. I continue to come up with the same answer. Nothing was wrong with your ship."
He looked up at the Admiral, then turned away again. Akbar could tell that this report was as difficult for Terpfen to say as it was for Akbar to hear.
"I checked your ship myself before you took off for Vortex. I found no indications of mechanical instabilities. I suppose I could have missed something."
Akbar shook his head. "Not you, Terpfen. I know your work too well." Terpfen continued in a quieter voice.
"I can reach only one Kudan from Data, Admiral."
But Terpfen's voice cut off as if he refused to speak the inevitable. Akbar did it for him. "Pilot error," he said. "I caused the crash. It's my fault. I've known it all along." Terpfen stood. His head hung so low that he showed only the bulging sack-like dome of his cranium.
"I wish there was some way I could prove otherwise, Admiral."
Akbar extended a flipper hand and placed it on Terpfen's gray crewman's uniform. "I know you've done your best. Now please do me one more favor. Outfit another B-wing for my personal use and provision it for a long journey. I'll be flying alone."
"Someone might object to having you fly again, Admiral," Terpfen said. "But don't worry, I can find some way around the problem. Where will you be going?"
"Home," Akbar answered, "after I tend to some unfinished business." Terpfen saluted smartly.
"Your ship will be waiting for you, sir."
Akbar felt a hard knot in his chest as he returned the salute. He stepped forward to the closed steel stone door and pounded on the ornate surface, demanding to be let in. The heavy door groaned open on automatic hinges. Akbar stood at the threshold as the members of the ruling council turned to look at him. The flowstone seats were sculpted and polished to a high luster, including the empty chair that still bore his own name. The air was too dry for his nostrils and stank with the underlying dusty smell of a museum. He could detect the pungent, nervous odor of human sweat mixed with the peppery steam from their chosen hot drinks and refreshments. Obese Senator Reckon Thorm waved a pudgy hand at Akbar.
"Why don't we make him lead the reparations team? That seems appropriate to me."
"I wouldn't think the Vors want him anywhere near their planet," Senator Bell Iblis said.
"The Vors haven't asked us to help them rebuild at all," Leia Organa Solo said. "But that doesn't mean we should ignore it."
"We're lucky the Vors are not as emotional as other races. This is already a terrible tragedy, but it does not seem likely it will turn into a galactic incident," Mon Mothma said.
Gripping the edge of the table, she stood and finally acknowledged Akbar's presence. Her skin looked pale, her face gaunt,
her eyes and cheeks sunken. She had skipped many important meetings lately. Akbar wondered if the Vortex tragedy had worsened her health.
"Admiral," Mon Mothma said, "these proceedings are closed. We will summon you after we have taken a vote."
Her voice seemed stern and cracking, devoid of the compassion that had launched her career in galactic politics. Minister of State Leia Organa looked in her dark eyes. A flood of sympathy crossed her face, but Akbar turned away with a stab of anger and embarrassment. He knew Leia would argue his case most strongly, and he expected support from General Raikin and General Dodonna. But he did not know how Senators Garm Bel Iblis, Krekin Thorm, or even Mon Mothma herself would vote.
"That doesn't matter," Akbar thought.
He would remove their need to decide, remove the possibility of further humiliation.
"Perhaps I can make these deliberations easier on all of us," Akbar said.
"What do you mean, Admiral?" Mon Mothma said, frowning at him. Her face was seamed with deep lines.
Leia half rose as she suddenly understood.
"Don't."
Akbar made a decisive gesture with his left fin hand, and Leia reluctantly sat down again. He touched the left breast on his pristine white uniform, fumbling with the catch as he removed his admiral's rank insignia.
"I have caused enormous pain and suffering to the people of Vortex. I have brought immense embarrassment to the New Republic, and I have called down terrible shame upon myself. I hereby resign as commander of the New Republic fleet, effective immediately. I regret the circumstances of my departure, but I am proud of the years I have served the Alliance. I only wish I could have done more."
He placed his insignia on the creamy alabaster shelf in front of the empty council seat that had once been his own. In shocked silence, the other council members stared at him like a mute tribunal. Before they could voice their mandatory, and probably insincere, objections, Akbar turned and strode out of the room, walking as tall as he dared, yet feeling crushed and insignificant. He went back toward his quarters to pack his most prized possessions before heading to the hangar bay, where he would take the ship Terpfen had promised him. He had one place to visit first, and then he would return to his homeworld of Calamari. If General Obi-Wan Kenobi could vanish into obscurity on a desert planet like Tatooine, Akbar could do the same and live out the rest of his life among the lush sea tree forests under the seas. With the pretense of taking out a B-Wing fighter to test its response under extreme stress, Terpfen soared away from Coruscant. The other distraught Calamarian crewmen wished him luck before he departed, assuming he intended to continue his desperate work to clear Admiral Akbar's name. But just before the jump into hyperspace, Terpfen entered a new series of coordinates into the Nava computer. The B-Wing lurched with a blast of hyperdrive engines. Star lines appeared around him, and the ship snapped into the frenzied, incomprehensible swirl of hyperspace. He reflexively slid the nictating membrane over his glassy eyes. Terpfen felt shudders pass through his body as he strained to resist the calling. But he knew by now, after all these years, that he could do nothing to fight it. Screaming nightmares never let him forget his ordeal in the hellish conditioning on the Imperial military training planet of Corrida. The scars on his battered head were not just from torture, but from Imperial vivisection, where the doctors had sawed open his skull and scooped out portions of his brain, segments that controlled a Calamarian's loyalty, his volition, and his resistance to special commands. The cruel Xena surgeons had replaced the missing areas of Terpfen's brain with specially grown organic circuits that mimicked the size, shape, and composition of the removed tissue. The organic circuits were perfectly camouflaged and could resist the most penetrating medical scan, but they made him a helpless cyborg, a perfect spy and saboteur who could not think for himself when the Imperials wanted him to think their thoughts. The circuits left him sufficient mental capacity to play his part, to make his own excuses each time the Imperials summoned him. After guiding his ship for several standard time units, Terpfen looked at the chronometer. At the precise instant indicated, he pulled the levers that switched off the hyperdrive motors and kicked in the sublight engines. His ship hung near the lacy veil of the Kron Drift, the gaseous remnants of a multiple supernova where four stars had simultaneously erupted some 4 millennia ago. The wisps of gas crackled with pinks, greens, and searing white. The residual X-rays and gamma radiation from the old supernova caused static over his comm system, but it would also mask this meeting from prying eyes. A dark Corridan ship already hung there waiting for him. With a flat stealth coating on its hull, the Corridan ship looked like a matte black insect that swallowed starlight, leaving only a jagged silhouette against the starfield. Protrusions of assault blasters and sensor antennas stuck out like spines. A burst of static came across Terpfen's comm system. Then the tight beam holotransmission of Ambassador Fergen's head focused itself inside the B-wing cockpit.
"Well, my little fish," Fergen said. His huge eyebrows looked like black feathers curling up on his forehead. "What is your report? Explain why our two victims were not killed in the crash you engineered."
Terpfen tried to stop the words from coming, but the organic circuits kicked in, providing all the answer the Imperial Ambassador needed.
"I sabotaged Akbar's personal ship, and that should have meant death for both passengers. But even I underestimated Akbar's skill as a pilot."
Fergen scowled. "So the mission failed."
"On the contrary," Terpfen said, "I believe it is even more successful. The New Republic is far more affected by this chain of events than it would be if a simple crash had killed the Minister of State and the Admiral. Their fleet commander has now resigned in disgrace, and the ruling council is left without an obvious replacement."
Fergen considered for a moment, then nodded as a slow smile spread across his fat, dark lips. He changed the subject. "Have you made any progress in uncovering the location of the third Jedi baby?" During his torturous conditioning, Terpfen had spent 4 weeks with his head entirely encased in a solid plasteel helmet that kept him blinded, sent jabs of pain at random and malicious intervals. He could not speak or drink or eat, fed entirely through intravenous nutritional supplements. Now, as he sat trapped inside the cockpit of the B-wing fighter, he felt swallowed up in that black pit again. Terpfen answered in a steady, uninflected voice.
"I have told you before, Ambassador, Anakin Solo is being held on a secret planet, the location of which is known only to a very few, including Admiral Akbar and the Jedi Master Luke Skywalker. I think it highly unlikely that Akbar will divulge it in casual conversation."
Fergen looked as if he had just bit into something sour and wanted to spit it out.
"Then what good are you?"
Terpfen would have taken no offense, even if his organic circuitry had allowed him to.
"I have set into motion another plan that may provide the information you seek."